This is an exclusive hot egg.
Welcome, welcome all to this episode of the Why to How podcast, where we explore adventures in STEM. After an amazing Canada-wide science fair a few months ago, I wanted to check in with our Platinum and Best Project Award winners to learn more about their science fair projects and the adventures they've had along the way. Today, I'm joined by Audrey Cohen, a student from Toronto and our Junior Platinum Award Discovery winner at Canada-wide Science Fair 2022 for her project, The Hidden Side of Your Dog's Love. Audrey, welcome to the podcast. Did you want to start us off by introducing yourself a bit and briefly explaining what your project is about?
Sure, thank you so much for having me. My name is Audrey Cowan. I'm 13 years old. I just started grade 8, and I have a love for all fields of science, but specifically biology and animals, including my wonderful dog. So, of course, my project would have to be about the relationship between microbiology and dogs. I focused on what sorts of zoonotic microbes dogs transmit to people through licks, and whether those microbes can consequence either party involved. To put that into a bit more scientific terms, I researched the zoonotic and potential pathogenic canine oral microbiome, the method of transfer being, of course, through licking.
Nice. And, I mean, makes sense. Lots of dog owners love to get a little lick from their dog, and I'm sure there's lots of advice out there saying, well, probably don't do that. So I'm curious to know what you learned from the Science Fair project. But did you want to start us off firstly by saying, by telling us, where does your idea come from?
Sure. Well, I have a dog, and she loves to lick people. Anyone who will allow her, she licks them. But when she was younger, she would frequently get sick from consuming rather questionable material. So I was always a little bit wary of her licks, as well as interested in what exactly was ailing her, and if she could pass along those microbes to her human family through something as seemingly harmless as her lick. So really, my dog's sickness was the inspiration for my projects.
Mm-hmm. That's fair enough. And why did you choose to focus on biology, microbiology? Why did you choose to focus on the licking of a dog specifically?
Well, I chose to focus on the canine oral microbiome and how it impacts humans through licking because a lot of people own dogs and a lot of people let their dogs lick them. Of course, a lot of dogs also get sick, and I'm sure many people have wondered what sorts of illnesses could be passed to us through something like licking. And I worked with bacteria and fungi specifically because my mother is a microbiologist, and her lab, which I use for the duration of my project, specializes in fungal research. Mm-hmm. But I also find bacteria very intriguing, so I wanted to include that too.
So obviously your mum was a big part of the project in getting yes. access to that lab and probably mentoring you along the way as well. Was there other places that you sort of learnt about bacteria and fungi from? I can't imagine this is your standard science class at school.
Yeah, well, in addition to science class, dinner table conversations helped me learn mm-hmm. a lot while I was growing up. And I also worked with a mentor, shout out to Jessie McAlpine. And she was very helpful in helping me learn all about how to conduct my research, as well as other scientific members of my family. And I also, mm-hmm. of course, did some background research in how to best go about sampling, best methods of sequencing, etc.
Was there a particular website or a particular resource that you recommend to people that are looking into sequencing and doing that sort of research?
Well, I use so many, I can't even count on both yeah. my hands how many. So,
check the references on your project board account.
Yeah.
yeah, for sure. So who did you turn to for support? You turned to Jessie McAlpine, you turned to your mum. What sort of support did these two ladies give you in your life?
Well, they certainly helped a lot about reassurance before judging and things like that, as well as me being like, I don't know if I have everything totally right. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, my school, teachers, friends, while I was actually at the science fair, they were very considerate about me having to miss class and things like that.
Nice. That's good. I mean, it's always difficult when Candlewide is hosted during a school week. To have the support of your school and your friends and your family definitely helps in that for sure. So what did you discover? Tell me. What happened?
Well, I discovered a lot. Mm-hmm. I was actually surprised by how much I found, in fact. So, for example, after I'd incubated my samples, I observed the thousands of colonies, which were very varying in terms of phenotype. And when I performed the sequencing of both the most common and the most interesting colonies, I found that dogs' mouths have a pretty cool microbiome, so like a fungal microbiome, including Malassezia, Naganesia, Rotaturula, Nothofoma, and Cladosporium, just to name a few.
Yep.
So Malassezia is usually harmless and is often found on the skin. According to one study, it inhabits the skin of about 90% of adults peacefully. And Rotaturula is pretty cool. It's a unicellular pigmented yeast, and my colonies were like a pinkish-red color, and it's very common as an environmental yeast. And then Cladosporium is a genus of mold. It's very common. But what was the most interesting, speaking in terms of the fungi, was the Nothofoma, because it's actually a plant pathogen. So I found that pretty cool. And then in terms of bacteria, I found Bacillus, Coccurea, Staphylococcus, Rothia, and somewhat concerningly, either the species Neisseria animaloris or Neisseria zeudigmatis. I'll mainly touch on the latter in terms of Neisseria animaloris and zeudigmatis, but I will also mention that both Staphylococcus and Rothia are well known for having a lot of pathogenic species. But the reason why I said that I was concerned about the Neisseria animaloris or zeudigmatis is because while they're both considered pretty rare, I found it in just from 10 dogs, the samples that I took from 10 dogs, and they can cause very serious infections.
Mm-hmm.
So I found that pretty concerning.
Yeah, I mean, I have many questions. Firstly, how did you learn to say all of those words? You just rattled them off so professionally just then.
Yeah, well, thank you. I did a lot of reading about what sorts of things these were, if they're pathogenic and things like that. So I kind of just figured out how to
pick it up. Yeah. Plant pathogens, presumably that's not something that's just standard in a dog's diet. So where's the plant pathogens coming from?
Well, dogs love to eat sticks, as I'm sure many people can attest to. So I'm presuming that, for example, if a dog was eating sticks or leaves or something like that, that contains Nothofoma, that was contaminated with Nothofoma, they could pick that up. And something interesting about Nothofoma is those little brown spots on olives that you might see are actually caused by Nothofoma.
Oh, interesting. That is a fun fact. Cool. So how bad is this? I mean, obviously there's some pretty interesting findings you've got there. There's more than a few pathogens that are now on our skin after our dog licks us. Is there something to be worried about? Like what do we need to know about this?
Well, I would say definitely it's not to be taken to the extreme where it's like, oh, don't have a dog. They can be real concerned for your health. But I would say to exercise some cautions. For example, don't let a dog lick an open wound because that could end pretty badly. As well as licking the face, especially near the mouth and eyes and nose. But other than just being a little bit cautious about being gifted with all of these microbes that the dog contains, it's okay.
Yeah, it's a double-edged sword. I mean, I don't like dogs kissing my face, and now you tell me science backs it up, so perfect. I mean, I'm going to hang on to that, and now I'm going to link to share to people every time they're like, oh, it's fine. It's not fine. So tell us, why is this important for us? Like why did you do this project and why is it important?
Well, I would say it is pretty important because dog licks are not as harmless as they present. And I've heard from around that some people say to let a dog lick an open wound because it'll be antimicrobial. But even though there is a possibility of that, I personally wouldn't risk getting infected with something even more serious. And then also, while there have been a lot of studies about bacteria in the canine oral microbiome and like what sorts of bacteria those are, fungi have been pretty left out of the conversation, and they're important too, as well as there have been very few studies that have focused on dogs transmitting microbes to people, especially through licks.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to talk a little bit more about fungi? It's not really something that I have any knowledge of. As you say, it's not really mentioned that often. I know it's a big thing that Jesse teaches, who is your mentor in the science fair project. So what do we need to know about fungi, and what do we need to know about dogs and fungi?
Well, there's so much to say about fungi, but I guess I'll just say fungi are different from bacteria being eukaryotes, and they can also cause infection. Well, okay. They both cause infection. They often live in different places. For example, when you do incubation, the fungi have different temperatures and different lengths and all sorts of things like that. So they are their own thing, but they're often found in a lot of similar places as bacteria, for example, in dogs' mouths. I did find less fungi than bacteria, but bacteria are often smaller, and there's a lot of different species, and then sometimes fungi can be a little bit more particular about their growth conditions. So
nice, interesting. It's all good to know. Prab in the Discord would like to know, how long did it take you to complete your science day project?
It took me a pretty long time. It was for actually being in the lab and sampling and writing all my reports and stuff. It was definitely at least 60 hours. Mm-hmm. I didn't quite count all the time outside of the lab, but I know it took a pretty long time and a lot of effort.
Do you remember when you first had the idea for the science day project?
Well, there was a couple other people in my school that were interested in doing the Toronto Science Fair, and I had never done a science fair before. So I figured, why don't I go to the meeting? I'll try this. This might be fun. And then I came up with the idea in about January-ish, and then I started my project. And I started my project in February and then completed it in March.
Nice. Yeah, so it's not too late for those listening in that haven't got a science fair project idea just yet. Do you remember, was there much of a process between when you first signed up for your very first science fair? Was there something that you didn't know about science fairs? Was there something that surprised you about how much was involved or who was involved?
Well, yeah, I did not think I would have to be, well, first of all, I did not think I was going to be making it to the nationals. I thought I was just going to do the regionals and that would be it. What surprised me about it? I guess I didn't really realize how much effort goes into making a project board for the science fair, because that took me a long time to write it. Mm-hmm. I think that's about.
Yeah, it. That's a good answer, because it is. So many science fair kids get so stuck on actually doing the science that they forget that there's a whole piece about actually communicating it. So you can have the best science fair project in the world, but if you don't know how to talk about it, if you don't know how to write about it or summarize it, then it's not actually that helpful to people, especially people that don't have a science background. Prabner also wants to know, how did you balance your schoolwork and other things with your science fair project?
Yeah, so that was something I had a little bit of difficulty with. I had to learn some time management skills. Mm-hmm. I guess I sort of made a little bit of a schedule for myself. I was when I get home from school, I'll work on the project board first so that I don't let it take up my entire evening, and then I can't fall asleep. And then, so I just sort of set out a little bit of a schedule and was within these hours, I'll work on this, within these hours, I'll work on that. But it definitely was pretty difficult.
Yeah. I mean, a schedule is definitely a good way to go about it. Just structuring some time so that you're not spending any time actually making the decision to then do further science fair study. You have it built into your schedule so that when it comes to that time, you just sit down and you don't have to think about it. You just go straight into doing it. Makes that switch between school and science fair project just that little bit easier when you don't have to get over that hurdle of, am I going to do it today? Am I not going to do it today? Yeah. I use the same thing with going to the gym or doing any of my habits. You know, if you just make it by the schedule, you don't think about it. You just do it. What were some of the mishaps and challenges that you faced while doing your science fair project? Because I can't imagine it all just went peachy perfect for your very first time.
There were so many. I'll just mention two. So First of all, I was doing my science fair project when a lot of the COVID-19 restrictions that aren't in place now were still in place. So when I was doing the actual sampling, I had to request that the owners of the dogs do their own sampling so that everyone would stay the safest and, of course, the dogs would be the most comfortable, because their well-being was priority in the sampling. So I had to create an instruction list of about 14 steps, I believe it was, and just hope that everyone would follow them to a T in terms of the sampling. And then also when I was before sequencing, I had to do PCR to amplify the DNA. And then the first time that I did it, it didn't quite work because the temperatures had the temperatures were like the tiniest bit off. So that messed up the whole process. So then I had to restart and I lost all of those precious hours. So that was definitely frustrating.
Yep, that's science for you. It's tough. It's brutal out there. What was it like working in a lab during COVID times?
It actually wasn't too different from when I've been in the lab before, because obviously when I'm working over petri dishes, especially when they're open and I don't want to contaminate them with breathing on them or things like that, so I would wear a mask and then gloves, of course, because lab safety is very important. So it wasn't actually too different from pre-COVID times so long ago.
so long ago. Can you describe to us what you felt when you got back your test results and it all came back in line with your hypothesis? Even more so, the surprising results that you didn't even expect?
For the sequencing, I was honestly, my first reaction was I was relieved that everything had worked, because I wasn't sure how everything would go, especially considering I had my time was a little bit cramped. So I was very relieved. And then I was also very interested was my second, because some of these I'd never even heard of. And when I looked them up, they were really, really cool. And I was surprised that everyday dogs just living in the city that I interacted with all the time were carrying all these things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. Yeah. Can you describe as well what you felt when your name got called out as a Platinum Award winner at Countrywide Science Fair?
I was incredibly surprised, but incredibly pleasantly surprised, because after the bronze medals had been announced and my names weren't amongst them, I was like, well, I guess I'm not going to be winning anything. But I think that was one of the best ways you can be proven wrong. So
that's a nice little surprise for you, that's for sure. Yeah. Where did your passion for scientific research come from, do you think?
Well, as I've mentioned, both my parents are scientists, and as I've also mentioned, dinner table conversations were always about science. So I've grown up always being really, really interested in science, and I have never not had an animal other than humans, of course, in my home. So I've always just loved animals and been so interested in how they work. So biology was something that I've always had a special little passion for.
Mm-hmm. So do you think you're a curious kid then?
I would think so, yeah.
Yeah, reading all the science books and always, you know, turning over a rock or seeing what animals are outside.
Because my dad would comment that it was so strange seeing his child across the dinner table reading a veterinary manual, some light reading. So
yeah, just some light reading. Yeah, I think we had very different upbringings, you and I. Very different dinner table conversations. That's amazing though. What was your favorite part about science fair, especially being your first year?
That it was like so amazing but so stressful at the same time. So my least favorite part was definitely all the judging, but my favorite part was all the activities in between. We got to have little virtual lab tours and attend little talks, and we were divided into these little teams where we did like games every evening at the nationals. That was pretty fun.
Yeah, just building that community of people that also did science fair projects and realizing, hey, some science nerds like us are pretty cool people.
I learned a lot from all the people I interacted with.
Mm-hmm. Do you have many science fair kids at your school? You said there's a few others that were interested in doing the Toronto Science Fair.
I think there were only 3 out of about roughly 400, so there weren't too many that. And then I was the only one that went to the nationals, so I was like, oh no, I'm going to be all alone.
But you fit right on in, and here you are.
Yeah.
So tell us then, why should other students do science fair projects, especially on top of all the other things keeping busy teenagers busy with their life?
Well, first of all, I find science so interesting, so that'll always be a reason. Mm-hmm. And second of all, as I've mentioned, I learned a lot of great life skills from the science fair. So I already mentioned about time management, but I'll like touch on perseverance pretty briefly, because as I said, my PCR failed the first time when I tried to do it, and all those wasted hours, I was so frustrated. But I just looked at the bigger picture and was like, I'm going to be done so soon. I just need to go and keep doing this and get this over with. And then also, I would say participating in things like the science fair could look pretty good on your resume. So,
mm-hmm. it's always funny to me just how often it comes up in conversation, but just the desire to be done is such a motivating factor that people just ignore. And it's like a, it's like Stockholm syndrome almost, where you just like hate to love it so much and you love to hate it. Yeah. Probe asks, what are you going to do next? Are you going to continue your project to a second year project? Are you going to try to do something different? You giving up science lab projects for good?
Well, I have so many ideas about how to continue with my project. So the first one is I would actually be really interested in almost dividing my project further. So for example, seeing, oh, what do city animals have in terms of their microbiome that differs from animals in the country, are, is being exposed to wildlife like raccoons that carry a lot of parasites. Does that add more dangerous microbes versus being in the country? Or does a raw food diet increase the level of dangerous microbes or the variety of microbes when compared to a vegetarian diet for dogs, for example? And then also what I found so interesting and what I really would like to pursue is on one of the dogs on the bacterial mouth sample, there was this one colony that was secreting a zone of inhibition, which means that it was killing off all of the other microbes that were trying to grow around it. And there is someone in my mom's lab that specializes in that. And he said he hadn't really seen something like that before, exactly like that. So I would really be interested in pursuing that and maybe even seeing like, oh, how does this work? And even testing it to see if I could turn it into an antibacterial.
Mm, that is really cool. Yeah, I think you're going to have a challenge in deciding which of those to pursue. What are the things that you, so obviously you're thinking about all of these different ideas now already. Are there certain factors that you're taking into consideration when deciding like which of these ideas do you pursue? Because there's a lot. How do you decide which one to go with?
Yeah, so I'm, first of all, I'm thinking about what would I be able to do in my mom's lab? Because obviously if I'm choosing like astronomy or something, I can't really do that. So I think, first of all, I was thinking, what can I do? And then I was also thinking, what's the most interesting and what is something that I could already, that I already know something about? So I already have a lot of knowledge about these zone of inhibitions and things like that. So I thought that that was really interesting and that could definitely be something that I would pursue.
Yeah, I like the idea of thinking about what you have access to first. It's relatively easy to come up with ideas for something, but what is the challenge is turning an idea into something that's a little bit practical. And so thinking about what do I have access to? Who do I have access to? What knowledge do I already know? What knowledge is relatively easy to find or could possibly be found out? And then the other constraint that, that a lot of people maybe forget about too is this something that I can realistically do before regional science fair time? Because it is creeping up and it's not like a an actual science role where you're, you know, you've got government funding to do science research for a couple of years. You have a few months to do it before your regional science fair. So if it's something that you want to do and present at a regional science fair, then you have to also think about, can I do this whole scientific process and get to a conclusion within the time frame that I have? Yeah. Good luck to you.
Thank you.
Do you have dreams about what you want to do when you're older? Do you have any idea about what comes next? I know you're very young and I hate putting pressure on young kids about this sort of process because I hated being asked that question when I was a kid, but do you have ideas about the future?
I do, yes. Although to be fair, my ideal job does change by every other day. But the career that I'm interested in at the moment is pursuing wildlife biology. And I would especially love it if I could even get an additional degree in neuroscience because I love the brain is so mysterious and it's so fascinating. We know like next to nothing about it in humans, but then in other animals, there's like, we really have almost no information.
Is this something that you're like actively pursuing? Are you reading wildlife neuroscience books? Well, I guess I don't exist. Are you reading neuroscience books? Like what, how are you fueling this curiosity of yours?
Well, I've read a lot of articles about neuroscience, and then as I mentioned, I have so many just manuals about animals. So,
just a light casual reading on a Sunday, yeah.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Do you think there's something that sets you apart? Is there some way of thinking that you have that other people maybe don't have? Like, what? How did you become one of our Platinum Award winners this year when others didn't? What's your secret ingredient?
That's a really good question. I think I just chose something that I was like really, really passionate in. And then therefore I wanted to spend all this time and I wanted to put all this effort into it. So I tried, I really tried. And then I think it paid off in the end. So.
Yeah. It is. Motivation is one of those things that can be so hard to maintain over a long period of time, especially when you're busy, especially when you've got school, especially when you've got, you know, friends or social life or other hobbies to do. So I think, yeah, finding something that you are passionate about, and try to remove as many of those barriers to entry as possible. Just make it as easy as possible for you to really enjoy this hobby of yours, the science fair project of yours. Yeah, I like that. Yeah, you are passionate. I can hear it. I can hear it. You're reading neuroscience manuals at the dinner table. I mean, of course you're passionate about it. So, big question for you then. Why is STEM self important?
Okay. So, in my opinion, STEM is like the language of the universe. So it's how everything makes sense. And then personally, STEM also helps me see the bigger picture in life. Like, for example, if I'm caught up on like test performance or something, I'll just think about how big the universe is, for example, and it really puts it into perspective. And then also, of course, STEM is just so interesting. So everything about it.
Just love it, hey? You just really do love it.
Yeah.
Love that. So advice time. Do you have any advice for people wanting to get started in science fair? You know, how do they choose what to focus on? How do you stay motivated? How do you come up with an idea?
Okay, so I know I've said this a lot, but choose something you're passionate about, because the more passionate you are about something, the more work you'll want to put into it. And then also, I feel like a lot of the time people try and choose something that'll impress other people. But really, if you don't really care about it, but you just think it'll impress other people, it probably won't. What'll probably impress them more is choosing something you're passionate about and working really, really hard at that. And then, of course, staying motivated is something that is very difficult for everyone. But the way I think about it is the harder I work, the faster I'll get it done. So.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the faster you get it done. I love that. Well, Audrey, I mean, fantastic advice. I mean, that's also great advice for how to choose a university, how to choose a career, how to choose your high school subjects. Don't choose something that impresses other people. Choose something that you're passionate about, because you're not going to work hard and you're not going to realistically do well easily anyway. You're not going to be effective at something if you don't care about it. So choose something you find interesting. Or find a reason to care about it, and you'll have all the success in the world.
Yes.
You'll live a happy life. Any other words of wisdom? Any other final comments you want to say before we wrap up the episode?
I would suggest, even if you're like on the fence, hesitant about doing the science fair, I would just suggest doing it, because there's not really too much that you can lose. So.
Exactly. Any people you want to thank before we go as well?
I want to thank all of my family. I want to thank Jesse. I want to thank my school for being so considerate, my teachers, my friends, just everybody that was around me while I was doing this. Thank you to everyone.
Love that. Well, Audrey, thank you so very much for being a guest on today's episode. We've got a bunch of great job and congratulations in the Discord here from people listening into the interview. This conversation has been full of inspiration, full of motivation and gems advice that I hope many of our listeners continue to reflect on as they think about their own adventures in STEM. So thank you so very much. I can't wait to see you hopefully at Candlelight Science Fair 2023.
Thank you so much.
Thank you all for joining us in this episode of Why to How, a podcast where we explore adventures in STEM. If you liked this podcast, consider leaving us a like on our social media. It's just ysc.sjc on Facebook and Instagram, ysc_sjc on Twitter, or join our Discord. It's Purple STEMWave. You can find the link on our website, pscience.ca. Please leave us a comment with your favourite part of the interview and let us know your own thoughts on the topics we discussed. And if you liked it, please do share a link to the podcast or YouTube video with friends who you think would love to follow along. And if you're on Apple Podcasts, leave us a review, as it really does help us reach more people. We'll have another amazing guest for you on the next episode, so stay tuned for more. Until then, have a wonderful day and stay curious.